Welcome to the Unfolding Podcast, a space where we explore what it looks like to really trust yourself, say no without guilt, and live your life like it actually belongs to you. I'm Erica Vohl, a decision mentor and inner trust guide, and I help women in midlife untangle from the life patterns of shape-shifting and keeping everyone else happy, claim how they are uniquely designed to make decisions, and understand their unique strengths. Using human design as a lens, we clear the noise of conditioning so their no feels powerful and their yes feels true, and they can move forward without self-doubt, guilt, or pressure to prove anything. On this show, we have honest conversations about self-trust, boundaries, energy, and identity, especially for women in midlife who are done living by the shoulds and second-guessing themselves. If you've taken every personality test and followed the recommended path and still can't shake that feeling that you've been spending your whole life trying to fit in when all you really wanted was to belong, you are in the right place. You'll hear stories, insights, and tools rooted in human design, coaching, and real life. Not to tell you what to do, like another self-help book, but to help you really hear yourself so you can stop overthinking and start making decisions that feel clear, grounded, and true. Last week, I published part one of this series, and I've been so moved by the response. In the first 2 days, it became my most read post on Substack. And the podcast has gotten so many listens. Women wrote to me personally and told me that they cried. They felt so seen. I can see that it's being shared, and that means everything. I have never had a response like this to something I've written. So thank you to those who have commented, responded, and sent me private messages. I'm so touched that the article touched you, and I'm so touched that you found your story in these other women's stories. That was really all I could hope for. If you have not listened to part one or read it, you can absolutely start here, but part two stands on its own. But if it really resonates, I would encourage you to go back to the beginning and listen to part one. What those 15 women shared deserves to be heard in full. So here's a taste of what part one was like. One woman was kicked under the table by her husband during their nationally syndicated radio show when he felt she was talking too much. Another stood up for women being dismissed at work and was pulled aside afterward and told that she'd embarrassed her company. A wall of men called her hysterical. These are not stories from 50 years ago. These are the experiences of women in midlife right now who are still carrying what happened to them. 15 women with different lives, different ages, different continents, with the same thread running through all of it, women who were told in large ways and small ways that their voice was too much or not enough. And something else is happening in midlife that I think is worth naming. For many of us, this is the season where we finally notice what's been happening. The patterns we've been carrying, the silence we've been keeping, the BS we've been tolerating, and we are done. We are no longer willing to shrink, stay quiet, or make ourselves smaller to make others comfortable. And you can tell that the patriarchy is not happy about it, but that's not our problem anymore. We are done with the BS. And yet, these women whose stories I shared have refused to stay entirely quiet. Even after everything they've experienced, they are still learning to trust their voices and to share their voices. And I thank all of these women. Part one was about what happened to women's voices from the outside, the silencing at home, at school, at work, the cultural pressure to sound more masculine, more logical, more acceptable to a certain part of the population. But the silencing doesn't come from just the outside. There's an internal cost that happens when women's voices are shut down and silenced. And it often happens before a woman has even opened her mouth. Researchers Nicola Brown and Renata Cook, who are Atlantic Fellows for Social and Economic Equity, identified something that may feel very familiar to you. They noted that before speaking up, many women run through a checklist, and it goes something like this. Should I say something? Perhaps I should wait for others to speak first. What if I don't have a relevant point to make? I wonder if everyone will think I don't have an opinion on this issue if I don't speak up. Okay, I'm going to speak, but how should I frame this so I don't sound stupid? Okay, I'm going to say this again. This is so important. Women run through a checklist before they even speak. Should I say something? Perhaps I should wait to hear others speak first. What if I don't have a relevant point to make? I wonder if everyone will think I don't have an opinion on this if I don't speak up. And I'm going to speak, but how should I frame this so that I don't sound stupid? And I would even add one more to this list. How will others perceive what I have to say, and how will they respond? It's this internal negotiation happening before we even open our mouths. And I'm sure most of us don't even realize that it's happening. It's exhausting. The researchers concluded something worth sitting with. The ability to speak with authority is a form of privilege. Speaking and the latitude of expressing one's views is a form of privilege. And I want to acknowledge that as a white woman, I know I carry a privilege that women of color don't have. The experiences in this article are real, and they are not the whole story of what it means to have your voice dismissed or silenced. Of the women I interviewed, Lisa described this internal monitoring so clearly. She said she tends to self-evaluate a lot, adapting her communication, her voice, her words, her tone, her pace, depending on her perception of how she's going to be received and the message she is trying to share. No one told her that outright. She learned to do it, and I would bet it's been decades of conditioning that's been internalized. And I know it happens for so many of us. We're doing it without even realizing it because it's so deeply ingrained in who we are. And it shows up in other ways too. Jen stayed safe for years. She stayed comfortable. She stayed in places where she was depended on, but not particularly valued. She said, "I certainly never had the voice to ask and demand what I was worth financially." The checklist doesn't just affect what we say in a meeting, or what we say at work or in our families. It affects us at home and in so many parts of our lives. It affects what we ask for, what we settle for, and what we decide we probably don't deserve. Charlotte described walking on eggshells during her transition from academia into crystal healing and spiritual coaching. She couldn't express her true worldviews and interests, and she felt it again in feminist spaces when, as she puts it, feminism itself had become very toxic. The pressure to silence yourself doesn't just come from patriarchal spaces. It comes from everywhere. And here's what I've noticed in my work with women. The same checklist doesn't show up before we speak. It actually shows up before we make decisions, too. Before a woman can say yes to what she really wants, she often runs through this similar internal check. How will this affect everyone else? Will this disappoint someone? Is this the right time? What will other people think? How will I be perceived if I make this decision? How will this affect my family? The list can be almost endless. And most of my clients don't realize that they're doing this until we slow down enough to look at it together. It's so deeply ingrained that it stops feeling like a choice a long time ago. It's become this unwritten rule of being a woman and being a mom for a lot of us. When we start to see it, there's usually a moment of recognition followed by something that can feel like grief, because it's not just how we speak. It's how we make decisions in the stories we carry about who we are and how long we've been making choices that were comfortable for everyone except ourselves. Speaking up has a cost, and for many of us, we consciously and sometimes unconsciously decided that the cost was too high to speak up. And we know from Bessel van der Kolk, that in his book, The Body Keeps Score, that silence and shutting down our voices has a physical side too. The women in this article know it firsthand. For me, it shows up in my hips and my lower back and my shoulder. Right behind my shoulder blade, there is this consistent, persistent pain. For years, I thought it was related to my scoliosis, but then I learned it was more than that. It's something I have learned to pay attention to. Sometimes it shows up as digestive issues for me. It's that pain in my shoulder blade. What I'm not saying needs to be said. My body gives me clear signals. My chiropractor even asked me recently during a visit about that stuck shoulder blade, whether there was something I wasn't saying out loud, and whether there was a situation that I didn't feel I could speak up. It can also show up in other ways with women. Skin issues like eczema, irritable bowel syndrome, headaches, the suppressed things need to come out, and they will come out in some way. Maybe just not out loud through our voices. Ellen shared that she's had a number of clients who have literally had throat issues when they don't speak their truth, from Hashimoto's to laryngitis. This isn't just an observation. There is actual research that backs this up. Psychologist Dana Jack identified a pattern in women suffering from depression. She calls it self-silencing. Women who suppress what they really think in order to keep the peace and meet everyone else's needs. Sound familiar? Researchers also found that women who didn't express themselves during conflict with their spouses were 4 times more likely to die than those who did. Let me say that again. Women who did not express themselves during conflict were 4 times more likely to die than those who did. Even when the researchers controlled for age, blood pressure, smoking, and cholesterol levels. That connection does not stop a depression. Researchers and medical professionals have increasingly examined the link between suppressed rage and autoimmune disorders in women. The very qualities in our culture that reward us for agreeability and extreme selflessness, that suppression of anger can actually predispose us to chronic illness and disease. We are rewarded for the very things that make us sick. The women in this article knew this in their bodies long before they had a language for it. After being mocked at work, Veronica described becoming guarded and careful, trying not to reveal too much. She avoided going on site whenever she could, and when she couldn't, she overprepared because she didn't trust her team to support her. That kind of hypervigilance, always bracing, always monitoring, always managing how much of yourself is safe to show, has a physical cost and it accumulates over years. Jen shared that she tried anti-anxiety medication for a time and it never worked. She had a very similar experience to what I did, and she said it just numbed her out. It didn't make me feel better, she said. I just wasn't dealing with my inner life. Numbness is its own kind of silence, and it lives in the body too. And Erin described something that stopped me when I read it. After 2 traumatic experiences in her late 20s, experiences where she asked for help and was told that what was happening to her wasn't actually happening at all, she found it harder to speak. Sometimes at all. She lost trust in her voice so completely that to this day, she finds it difficult to sustain conversation for more than 10 or 15 minutes. She described feeling like something is in her throat, like she has something to say and simply cannot get it out. Erin is still finding her way back, and she is honest about that. What these women's experiences make clear is that going silent isn't about being dramatic or being too sensitive or not being able to handle things. When women are silenced long enough and consistently enough, the silence becomes a structural part of their own being. It lives in their nervous system and in their throat and in their body. And what the body learns, the body can also learn. And that's where we're going next. I started this Unfolding podcast as a way to help me find my voice as a coach because I knew I had something to share, but I didn't trust that part of me yet. That old story that I didn't have anything important to say was an old story, and it has been with me for a long time. I've talked about it in my previous episode called Did I Have Anything Important to Say? It was so familiar that it wasn't until a friend started a podcast that I thought, oh, I could never do that. I don't have anything important to say. And that's when I noticed it. I took note of it. About 2 years ago, I started learning about my communication center in human design. At first, it was, oh, that's interesting. I tend to talk about how I feel. I have gate 35, for those of you that know the human design throat center, which is all about new adventures and sharing my new discoveries with others. And then I took a class with Julie Ciardi, my mentor, on the communication center, and something drastically shifted for me. She challenged me to look at that gate 35 differently, not just as a trait to understand, but as a way of communicating to lean into. What I have explored, what I have tried, what I have risked, and what did it teach me, and to share my experiences with others, I now know that that's what connects me to people. I realized that I had been doing this for years without even knowing about it. A year's worth of email newsletters sharing my own story as an example of the power of human design, connecting with people through what I had lived rather than what I knew. I didn't realize that unconsciously I was already sharing in a way that was most natural. I just had that old story running through my head. That one gate in my communication center tends to express as I feel. It means something different to me now. When those words come out, I know I'm not filtering everything through what will make me sound good or look good. I'm not stuck in my head trying to have the right thing to say or the witty thing to say. I'm really tapped into what's coming up for me. Before, I would have a million thoughts and want to get them all out at once. Or I would be busy thinking about the next thing to say that many times I'd realized I wasn't even present in the conversation I was already in. In my chart, my throat center is undefined, so I don't have a consistent way to communicate and express myself. It explains why I talked to fill the silences for most of my life. The unhealthy pattern of the throat center is talking excessively to feel heard. That was so much the story of my life. I talked because I was uncomfortable with the quiet. I talked because I was afraid of what if I stopped and people would realize I didn't have anything worth saying. When I started sitting back and only speaking when I felt genuinely compelled, instead of talking to fill the space, people actually noticed. Somebody actually mentioned it to me after a meeting one day. And then when I did talk, what I noticed was that my words landed more powerfully because they came from inspiration and not from pressure. And when I'm in the right room with the right people, it can flow. And then when I'm lit up, oh, watch out. It really comes out. When I'm forcing it, everyone can feel it too. They notice it. I say all of this not because I have it figured out. I don't. I am still catching myself in these old patterns, especially around my family or when I'm feeling really unsure of myself, but I know how they show up now, and that is really helpful. That changes everything. I also know that I'm not unique in not trusting my voice. That was what this whole article series confirmed for me. 15 women with different lives and different designs, the same story that was sort of ran underneath all of it. You have a unique way of communicating. All the women in this article have a unique way of communicating, not from that edited version, not the one that was conditioned out of us, but it was the one that makes us feel most like us. What I found so fascinating about human design is that yours shows that natural way that you communicate, and it's different for everyone. When you look at a human design chart, it can look something like out of a science fiction book with shapes and numbers and the lines connecting everything. But there's so much information in those shapes and those numbers. And even for somebody that has that gate 35 that I have, it might show up even differently based on other things in the chart. Human design can feel really overwhelming at first, but when you start with how you were designed to communicate, a lot of the things that felt like flaws or weaknesses actually start to make sense, and they carry a gift. The communication center is the third shape from the top if you're looking at it. It's a square. It's the center that all energy moves through, which actually makes sense because we speak, the way we lead, the way we express our thoughts and emotions, our identities, our values, all flow through that one place. When you look at that square in your chart, the first thing you'll want to notice is if it's colored in or if it's white. Colored in means you have a defined throat center, and white means undefined. Neither one is better than the other. They are just giving us information about you. If that center is colored in, that tells us that you have a consistent way of communicating. Your voice, your way of expressing yourself, it has a quality that doesn't change depending on who you're with or what room you're in. 12 of the 15 women that I interviewed for this article have defined throat centers. And what struck me as I read through their stories is that almost every single one of them was told, directly or indirectly, to use that consistent voice differently, either to be more quiet or more palatable. Kelly was called hysterical for using hers to stand up for other women. Ellen was kicked under the table for using hers too freely. Lana was told she elaborated too much. Charlotte felt like she could never win an argument against someone who was more dominant. And Priestess Erica was told that her way of showing up no longer fit. Their voice was naturally there. The world was trying to edit it for them. For women with defined throats, the conditioning doesn't just silence the voice. It teaches you to distrust it and to second guess it. The healthy expression of a defined throat is to find a specific way that that center is designed to speak for you. And trusting that. Trusting that your words will land when you're speaking authentically instead of feeling edited or running through that checklist we talked about earlier. If your throat is undefined and it shows up white in your chart, and maybe it has a couple of numbers activated, maybe it has none of the numbers activated, that means you don't have a consistent way of communicating. It means you're incredibly adaptable. You speak in different ways with different people. You can pick up on the energy of the people around you and you can amplify it. But one of the challenges of this undefined throat center is talking to fill the silence. Speaking from pressure rather than when you are inspired. Feeling like you have to keep up with the conversation or to be noticed. Talking excessively to feel heard. That was the story of my life for so long. And it was not, I'm not alone. Heather and Talia and Lizzie and I, we all have undefined throats. And looking back through their stories, I can see a pattern. Lizzie was told she was too much and filed herself down to fit. Talia was shunned for speaking up and learned to monitor self constantly. Heather absorbed her mother's quiet and found herself going silent in groups when she didn't feel like she knew enough. And for me, I talked for hours when I was on a road trip with my mom because I was so uncomfortable with the silence. I thought that's how you were supposed to be when you were a woman. You fill the silence with conversation. What all of us were doing was speaking from pressure. That pressure might have been outside of us, but a lot of times it comes from inside of us too. We were absorbing the energy of the rooms we were in and the people we were with, and we were either talking over it or we were going quiet. The healthy expression of an undefined throat is waiting for the inspiration, rather than speaking from pressure. It is hard, I can tell you from experience. Words will land most powerfully when they come from this genuine impulse, not when you're trying to keep up or to prove that you belong in a conversation. Something cracked open for every one of these women. It wasn't the same thing for any of them, and not all of them are on the other side of it. Some are still learning to trust their voice. Some are feeling their way forward, but something ever so slightly has shifted. For some, it was learning their human design. Charlotte described diving into her throat center as liberation, seeing the many faces of her voice and embracing them all as her own inner orchestra. Lizzie used human design along with astrology to understand the cadence and the rhythm of how and when she communicates. Learning to follow inspiration rather than that force, that consistency that she was never designed to have. Jen described human design as a permission slip to be who she is. And perimenopause helped her too. She described it as getting rid of your attachment to giving a shit what other people think. There's actual science on this, she said. And Lana came to understand she was wired to express, to lead, and to use her voice in a meaningful way. She said, quote, "A big part of my journey has been reclaiming that." For some, it was the wake-up call of perimenopause. Katie spent most of her life being flexible and agreeable, going along because she didn't yet know she could say, "I don't want that." Perimenopause changed it. She said she's vocalizing those things now. 8 years ago, Ellen left her marriage, and then menopause shifted something else. She said she stopped being a people pleaser, learning fierce self-compassion. She began coaching other midlife women who were finding their way back to their voices. For some, it was a moment that left no room for silence. Veronica's ex-husband passed away from cancer, and days later, she learned his life insurance policy had been redirected away from what was intended for their family. She reached out to her former mother-in-law and had a direct, calm, and clear conversation, and she said she didn't back down. Quote, "I realized I could use my voice in a more emotional, high-stakes situations and stand firm without losing myself," she said. That experience changed something in her permanently. For Kelly, she did the pattern work in life coaching and finally saw where it started. 3-, 4-, 5-year-old Kelly showing up to situations that had nothing to do with her anymore. Self-compassion for that part of her that helped her identify in real time that when little Kelly was there and give herself enough time to respond rather than to react. For some, it was slow work. Talia put what she was learning to the test over and over, and she described it like getting back into acting after time away, using a muscle that wasn't as strong, but it came back. For Heather, she is still in the process of realizing she adds value to everything she does, including to what she says. Lisa started finding new environments like Substack to shape and to share her voice, having always felt like she thought differently from everyone else. Danielle is still desensitizing herself to the sound of her voice by recording guided meditations. People tell her her voice is soothing and she's starting to believe them. What all of these paths have in common is this. None of these women took a course. None of them fixed their voice. What shifted was their relationship with what was already there. We know our world is shifting. People are talking about it everywhere. You can feel it, even if they are not naming it. We are in the midst of a major era shift. For the last 400 years, we've been in the era of planning. It was an era of structure and logic and hustle and fitting in, where the loudest, most certain, and most authoritative voices were rewarded. There were gurus and experts, along with institutions who told us what to think, how to live, and what was expected of us. Thank goodness that this era is ending. We are seeing it play out in real time, this grasping at old structures, this demanding that we comply. The loudest voices getting louder because they can feel that things are slipping. We are moving into an era that is different. The era of the individual, where trusting your own inner authority, intuitive decision-making, self-expression, and living more authentically are what will thrive in this new era. We are moving away from the gurus and the experts toward our own inner knowing. Our own inner wisdom will matter more than any external validation. Midlife women have been living in this energy for a long time without even knowing it had a name. We've been feeling it, We've been told to ignore those things that come naturally to us, and we've been speaking from feeling it and trusting what we sense in a room, and we're made wrong for it. We were told that it made us less authoritative and less worthy of being heard. And as it turns out, it made us exactly right for this moment in time. Women's voices are more important now than ever, not despite the way we communicate, but because of it. And we won't always be the loudest in the room, but we will be the ones that people remember. You may have recognized yourself in these women's stories. Maybe you're still carrying that old story that you don't have anything important to say, that the thoughts and the feelings and the observations that you have aren't worth taking up space. Or maybe it goes even deeper. Maybe you were told directly as a kid that your voice did not matter, that you did not matter. That's a different wound, and it lives in a different place. Whatever your version of this is, what these women found is that there is a way back, and it's not through fixing how you communicate. It's through understanding how you were designed to communicate in the first place. You have a unique way of communicating and expressing yourself, and it doesn't always have to be out loud. It lives in your writing, your creativity, how you express yourself through maybe your clothes, how you move, the way you hold a room, the way you show up for people around you. All of this has more power than you even know. We don't know how we're affecting others until they tell us many times. Your human design can show you your natural way of communicating and what that looks like. If you want to go deeper, I will be hosting a workshop called Your Voice by Design, Understanding Your Unique Way of Communicating. I moved it to May 28th, and it's exclusively for paid Substack subscribers. I knew there was more coming through. The more I wrote this article, the more I knew that needed deeper look. We will look at your communication center, what it reveals about how you are naturally designed to express yourself, and how to start trusting that instead of the version you learned somewhere along the way. And I want to personally thank each woman who contributed her story. Lana, Priestess Erica, Linda, Ellen, Veronica, Charlotte, Katie, Heather, Talia, Jen, Kelly, Erin, Lisa, Lizzie, and Danielle. You all who contributed made this story, this article, this podcast so much more rich, and I am so grateful for all of you for telling your stories. Thank you for joining me. If this episode resonated with you, please share it with a friend or a family member or a colleague. Thank you for joining me. Be well. See you next time.